Hey, welcome to the Tim and Gugabe podcast. This is your host, Tim, and I'm with Gugabe. How are you doing, man? Are you surviving the quarantine? How is it in Australia anyway?
Honestly, we've been stuck inside, but like it's barely done much over here, so I mean obviously most of America's probably like that. But yeah, how's Chicago going?
It's not bad. It's pretty shut down. We actually are required to wear masks when we go outside. It's like the law now. So, I mean, you're not gonna get arrested if you don't, but I think it's just to kind of keep people cautious,
Yeah, fair enough. I think we're starting to reopen because like it's mostly passed over us. Like in jiu-jitsu, some people think it might be back in like 2 months, which seems optimistic, but yeah, that'd be good.
I haven't paid attention to I feel like I was following the whole COVID-19 stuff closely, but in the last week I feel like I've kind of just stopped paying attention to it because it's kind of the same shit, So and since it's good for the UFC to start back up so we can kind of get our minds off it. But speaking of, I think yeah, you want to recap that card real quick? We can kind of just go quickly through
Yeah,
the
that works for me.
Alvy Span fight.
Yeah,
Stone Cold Lock at -400.
like I thought I had the right side of LVKO, but knowing he didn't get the finish for that well. Like even Alvy round one, Alvy winning round one was not outlandish. Like he literally doubled him up in volume, and like standing arm triangle was nice, but Span then proceeded to do nothing else.
It one of those fights where I kind of felt like I thought the judges were going to give it to Span because even though you could conceivably give it to either guy, just because Span was at least attempting a submission and kind of moving forward in round one. But I don't necessarily agree he won round one. You know what I mean? I just thought the judges would give it to him, but kind of your classic split decision, I feel.
Yeah, I had the same view. Like, I was sort of thinking, 60% chance that Span's got it. Span was an awful, awful bet here. But,
Awful
like,
bet, yeah.
I only had LVKO, so I didn't really care what the decision went to be honest. So I was just like, I was more frustrated at LV going for that stupid guillotine.
Yeah, there's a I you and I have kind of always kind of been very suspicious of Span because he just seems like he can't strike for prolonged periods. He seems super uncomfortable. He can throw a powerful blitz, and then if he can't get that, then he kind of just dives for takedowns and he's not even a very good grappler. So it's I feel like anytime he doesn't get an early finish or just knock someone unconscious or bully sub them, he's in a serious trouble. And Alvy, for what he is, he can stop takedowns, That's the one thing he still has.
Yeah, he can stop takedowns, and if you come into him in the straight line, he'll punch you hard in the face.
I mean,
Like
he can really help.
he's not gonna proactively follow you or anything, but if you're gonna give him a clear target, he'll hit you.
For sure.
Best part was Span getting hit by the same punch 5 times in the first round.
Yeah, seriously. Mitchell Rosa, I have a very different view of this fight than everyone seems to think that Mitchell's like Damian Maya now, but I have a very different view of this. I think it was more of Rosa just not being able to wrestle and getting stuck off his back because even though he's a black belt, we've seen this happen to him before, And grappling is a pretty consistent art fight to fight. And it was like 2 fights ago, Mitchell was out grappled by Bobby Moffitt. And just other guys who can wrestle, I feel like will be totally fine versus Mitchell. They're just not going to get taken down at will. And I don't know, Brad Katona out wrestled Bryce Mitchell. I'm very I don't know. I'm gonna be looking forward to if he gets overvalued against somebody who can stop takedowns later, But I guess that's he still looked good, but I do think it was a little bit more to do with Rosa kind of being a bad wrestler,
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I was expecting Rose's guard retention to be better, but again, yeah, I see he's passed a bunch, which is not a good sign. I had to go distance, which was the easiest bet over at minus 150. Like, there was never an instant of doubt.
See, but obviously you're noting sarcasm. I didn't think, like, that none of the twisters were close. There was, like, an arm triangle or two that were kind of close, but that's really it. You know, it wasn't, like, Mitchell couldn't really get that shoulder pressure up against, and I didn't even bet this. I'm just, like, saying my own view. He couldn't really get that shoulder pressure in the right spot on the angle on the arm triangle, you know? And then Rosa would just kind of, like, roll over and give up his back to avoid it. So, like, I actually think, like, it was value, minus 150. It might have seemed like the subs were close, but I think the commentators were going a little more nuts than they should have. But I don't know. I'm just kind of being annoying about this fight. But I didn't even have any money on it either, you know?
I felt the arm triangles were, I felt as one of those arm triangles was quite close.
There was, for sure. The twisters weren't at all, though. It's true, like, but, yeah.
Honestly, with a twister, like, I've done them maybe once myself, so I'm not sure exactly what I'm looking at most of the time.
Yeah, so, like, essentially, it's a high school guillotine. Like, for folk-style wrestling, like, what you would do to pin someone, you have to get both their shoulder blades down, and what you would do is you put a hook in, and you essentially put their arm around your own neck, and then you, like, squeeze their head with your two hands. And the thing is, like, Rosa was controlling he kept escaping, like, with his other leg, essentially. So, like, people were maybe looking towards the top, towards his head, because that's where Mitchell's actually applying the twister. But Rosa's leg, he kept giving himself leverage to spin out, you know? Like that's how he was defending it. So he really wasn't that close. But, like, I'm not, like, an expert on this, but it is, like, a move I'm pretty competent in, just because it comes from, like, wrestling, you know? Like most, it's kind of just, like, a modified catch wrestling move that people got from folk-style wrestling. But hasn't only, like, one other one been done? It was, like, Zombie, I think, Korean Zombie.
Yeah, Zombie Garcia. Actually, the second fight with Mitchell, I've kind of felt I've had to go a distance in him versus Moffat. I had the same sort of feeling there, where it was like, it was scrappy, there was a bunch of deep sub attempts, and I was like, I probably shouldn't play GTD, but also I was thinking, in terms of the twister thing, I see Mitchell, he just seems to love his twister. That's probably going to bite him in the ass a lot if he goes up against better grapplers, because like, he could have taken the back with a lot of those twister attempts, and instead he does this weird meme shits up.
Yeah, I just think you can, against, like, a good grappler, I like, especially with a wrestler base that, like, Rosa could defend the sub, but he couldn't, like, turn it into an opportunity to reverse position just because he's not as good of a wrestler. But, yeah, just like you said, like, if he was trying that on, like, Moffitt, for example, I think Moffitt would have just got position, you know?
But yeah, could easily. Yeah, he's better off just putting hooks in a lot of time, to be honest. So it's like, yeah, he could easily fuck himself in a future fight doing that.
I just think Mitchell kind of got blessed with, like, two fights in a row where, like, the guys were really prone to getting wrestle fucked. Because, I mean, we've seen that happen with Sales and Rosa before. And it kind of makes me feel dumb for not, like, I mean, I didn't bet either fight, you know, but it kind of makes me feel dumb for not going in on Mitchell. But I do think that's a little hindsight. But it's like, we've seen Mitchell go against Tyler Diamond, Moffitt, and Katona, and he wasn't a dominant wrestler in those, you know? Like, he got out-wrestled in almost all those matchups, so, yeah. But Luke A. Price, that was kind of, that was fun for what it was.
It was fun. I think Luke A. is kind of, he's lost, he just seems to have less of the ability to pull the trigger. Like, I felt Price was winning minutes in that fight, just because Price seemed a lot more enthusiastic.
Yeah.
IDD battles got bailed out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was a miracle. Fight. Yeah. Like, I had a few John Graham Robbins with the ITD in it, because I was just like, I needed to get more down through the limits, and I'd had you parlay it, and I was like, oh, Price, Luke, ITD, that's a easy tick of the box.
I mean, Luke looked more like minus 130 or 140, you know, honestly. Like, Nico did a good job of just kind of, like, spamming volume, which is something he usually doesn't do. But, yeah, that was a wild, wild fight.
Yeah, kind of my feeling. Luka is probably still a bit more technically savvy, but Price just kind of had him on enthusiasm for a lot of it. And yeah. Luka kind of needed those, like, he probably, you know, probably the biggest knockdowns, but like Price seemed to be doing more minute to minute, I guess.
Yeah, which is like you wouldn't have thought that. You thought that would have maybe been the opposite going in.
And also, Price's chin looked better than it has historically. Like, Price has always kind of been a glass cannon.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Esparza-Watterson, weird fight. I bet Esparza, and it was kind of like, the thing is, the striking actually, like, I put on my write-up, like, I think people were just assuming Watterson would win the striking, and I actually, like, thought Esparza had a really good chance to win the striking, you know? And I thought it was pretty close, you know? I guess I could be biased, but I thought Esparza won round one and three, you know? But it was close, for sure.
Yeah, I felt round one was reasonable, and to be honest, after round two, I panicked, and I pretty much walked off to go hedge. So I was, like, wildly researching through accounts, finding ways to get on Watterson live to hedge off my Esparza bet, so I didn't even watch round three. I was just like, this is a split decision. I know this is a split decision. Fuck this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was a split. Like, honestly, it could have, like, no round was extremely clear. I did think Esparza, I feel like the first round was essentially a stalemate, and then Esparza got, like, a 30-second takedown, so it was kind of, like, probably her, right? But, I mean, I could see, she didn't really do much on top either, so I could see an argument for Watterson. Round two was kind of probably Watterson, and round three, I don't know. It was just kind of weird, but I thought Esparza kind of fought dumb. But I mean, that's the thing, though. If you're betting Watterson, like, her win condition was always going to be a split. Like, I feel like Esparza is never going to get dominated in this fight, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. Also, but, like,
yeah,
just mess.
I mean, it was a mess, and I was kind of sweating my bet for sure, you know?
Yeah, I love those. What was I thinking? As far as, yeah, like, Watterson, honestly, like, she's got a few too many holes. Like, even the boxing defense is kind of shoddy. Esparza's hands have improved over the years. Like, she was beating Gadalia on the fight. For the most part.
Yeah, yeah, she out... Yeah, the thing is, like, I wrote in my write-up, she outdistanced Cynthia Calvillo, and, like, I think Cynthia, like, outstruck Courtney Casey over three rounds. Like, she's not bad, you know? Like, I think she outstruck Calvillo and outstruck Gadalia, and Watterson's only outdistance-struck one fighter in her career. So it's like, I kind of thought, like, even if they got stuck on the feet, Esparza would be okay, you know? Like, I mean, I wouldn't say she would, like, dominate or anything, but she did outland Watterson in the total strikes, barely, but she did. But she won the head strike battle 34-15, and I think that's probably what gave her the nod, you know?
Yeah, I can agree with that.
But yeah, that, I mean, that was still a mess. I thought she would actively kind of wrestle a little more, but I think Watterson was moving laterally well, which kind of gave Esparza some issues. But, oh God, Verdum Olenek, this was sad to watch.
This was great.
For Verdum, I was happy for Olenek. I mean, I had Verdum in parlay, so I wasn't happy on that part. I like Olenek, though, but, I'm just saying, Verdum looked bad.
Yeah, I had some of Verdum. I hedged it with Atlantic KO, which it was plus 900, and I felt that was the best way to hedge it pre-fight. Yeah. I'm happy for Atlantic. Like, the way I kind of described this to somebody was, imagine if that one dude at your tennis court who just does drop shots beat old and fat Roger Federer. Because that was kind of the dynamic.
Yeah, it was a... It was ridiculous, man. Like Verdum, I mean, he was just like hanging out by the cage in the first round, just allowing like Olenek to tee off, and he just like wasn't doing anything. And then he was in like extremely dominant positions where I feel like he could have just landed massive grounded pound, and then he went for like mounted arm bars. And like, if you jump for an arm bar from mount, it's just such an unstable position. Like, I feel like if you have mount or someone's back, you shouldn't do anything except a rear naked choke. You know, like I don't know. It was a ridiculous fight.
Like, I don't mind the Darius Darrow, but like one week kind of falling off anyway, and like, all right, fuck it, I might as well take the 10% shot. But you shouldn't be giving up a solid back control or a solid mount.
Yeah, for... like if you're losing position, that's fine to throw up a submission. But if you have like extremely stable position, why would you go for an armbar?
Particularly when like I'm a heavyweight myself. Doom has a good guard for a heavyweight, but you don't want to be on your back. If you're like a flyweight or something, I think you can like explain it a little bit more, just because you probably got more culpabilities to do stuff with a good guard position off that. But like, Doom was tired. He wasn't doing shit off. He wasn't getting a guard sub 9 minutes into that fight while he was exhausted.
Yeah, and if you go on your back, you also allow the other guy to have an option to just stand up. Like, I mean, you can control posture a little bit, but like, not always, you know? And,
I mean, the Kimura, that guard Kimura is probably the closest he came to an actual sub, wasn't it, from memory?
Yeah, that was really close. I actually thought he was going to tap him from there.
Yes, I am.
Arm bars, I didn't think he was really, I was kind of like, yeah, like I thought the Kimura was in, but, it is hilarious because, like, Verdum, it was such a strange fight because, like, Verdum obviously dominated round three and got dominated round one, you know? So it's like those were easy to score. But round two, like, Verdum was up the first 3 minutes dominantly, and then he just kind of, like, gave away the last 2 minutes, you know? And it was like if he just wouldn't have gone for that armbar and just held position, he would have won a very clear decision. He would have got round two and three easily. It was like he just gave away the fight. Olenek came in with like better cardio, I feel like, than normal, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he's lost a bit of weight, and just some of it just seemed like mindset as well. Like, Olenek still got tired, but it was like Nico Price. I wouldn't call Nico Price fit, but he wasn't body minded. Just having the willpower to keep going forward is worth a lot in that sort of exchange. Well,
for sure. Cerrone Pettis, I thought this fight was actually pretty fun for what it was, you know?
Yeah, same. It was good, decent fun. I felt Cerrone probably deserved the nod, but I'm not going to say it was like an outlandish robbery.
It was pretty close. Like, I didn't have strong opinions on either side. I thought it was a close fight.
Yeah, I had small play. I had small plans for only money line. My original take was I wouldn't play Pettis money line. I'd play him no scorecards instead, just because I couldn't see a situation where you confidently had Pettis decision. Like, this is kind of how Pettis would win a decision, where you're still thinking, like, going to the scorecards, there's a 60% chance Cerrone's won this. So, like, you know, Pettis in no scorecards, Pettis money line paying the same thing. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and even then, like, Pettis kind of bailed out in round three of the punch that hurts Ronnie's eye. Like, Cerrone won, like, maybe 80% of round three, I remember feeling like.
I can't remember. For some reason, I'm, like, mixing up the rounds. I just felt like Pettis was kind of landing some of the bigger shots, you know, even though, like, Cerrone was, like, winning. He'd be winning for, like, 45 seconds, and then there would be, like, a big shot for Pettis, and, like, Cerrone would be winning like 20 seconds and they're, you know what I mean? And then Pettis would land something big. So I thought it was going to be a split decision. When I heard 29-28, I actually thought Cerrone might get it, but who knows?
Yeah, I felt like kind of, I felt first two rounds of both kind of Cerrone 55-45. Third round was sort of Pettis 60-40, but even then, like, Cerrone did finish the round better. So yeah, you never know the judges, but oh well, as it was. I'm actually curious what rounds actually were given, which way. We'll check now.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
We've got... Pettis got a decent spread. You got round one on one scorecard and round two on the other two scorecards.
Yeah.
As far as the universe, they got round three. Oh, well. Again, like, media's pretty split. Like, yeah, I lost on Cerrone, but I'm not going to act like it was some outlandish robbery.
Yeah, it was just a pretty close fight. Hardy De Castro. I regret not playing Hardy, but I guess that's a little bit of hindsight. But I think Hardy's fine for what he is, you know? Like, he's gonna give you, like, he's hard to hit, and he's gonna give you like decent cardio and length and just kind of like defense for a heavyweight, which is kind of rare, and he's athletic, but I felt like De Castro looked all right for the first round, but I think even just in his like regional fights, it looked like he probably couldn't go hard for three rounds, you know? And I feel like he kind of just lowered his output because he was afraid to get tired, you know? And Hardy just kind of cruised, right?
Much. Leg kick's obviously a big thing. Hardy's chin was also pretty solid. Like, Castro hit him pretty hard a few times early.
Yeah, I've liked Hardy's chin since I've, like, seen it and just kind of his ability to evade. And he kind of just gets out of the pocket with athleticism, you know?
Yeah. Also, I don't think Hardy himself is that big a hitter, just based on the feelings I've had so far. Like, he'll knock you out if you kind of go away. But I just don't think he's, like, up there in edge. I don't think he's, like, a big hitter for heavyweight. It's like a Volkov hitter, I guess.
Yeah, I think he's just kind of, like, he's kind of moderate, you know? Just kind of, not maybe average, you know? Not a big hitter.
Yeah, not, like, hot take or anything. But, like, when I heard Hardy was coming in with Hardy's, like, athletic background, I kind of expected something a bit more freakish. Like, he's clearly a good athlete for heavyweight. He's well-coordinated and all that, but he's not, like, blowing, you know, I expect Ngannou sort of level shit.
No.
In terms of shit, yeah.
I want to see that fight. I want to see Ngannou Hardy because I honestly think, like, I don't think Hardy will be that easy to put away, you know, or to catch. And I feel like Ngannou just kind of runs forward. I mean, we'll talk about it in a second, but I feel like Ngannou just kind of runs forward, like, with his hands down, with zero technique, and just kind of, like, blitzes people with athleticism. And I feel like Hardy might be able to match his athleticism and be able to evade, you know, and kind of just, like, move. You know, like, Stipe just, like, moved his head and kind of survived. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like that fight could be interesting, you know?
It's just a margin of error. Like, you know, Hardy would have to, like, unless you're getting proper takedown time in the Ngannou, the margin for error on trying to evade him is just like, he succeeds once, he wins. You succeed 20 times, you win. It's stupid. It really is.
We'll talk about it in a second. Cater and Stevens, this was an awesome fight. I thought both guys looked good.
Yeah, Stevens, Stevens actually looked quite intelligent what he was doing. He immediately twigged on the leg kicks. He opened hard and well, worked the body.
Cater is pretty awesome when he gets his range down, you know? Like, he always kind of has, like, a rough round one. But when he starts, like, landing and gets his range, like, he punches hard, too.
I also kind of felt Stevens forced him to start, like, really going for the finish.
Yeah, yeah.
Cater kind of realized he had to keep Stevens honest through the sort of counterpunching, just because, like, Stevens was clearly not going to just be out. He couldn't just, like, pick and move Stevens the way he was fighting.
Yeah.
It was a good fight.
Yeah, and I feel like Stevens just kind of, like, went to the leg kicks early and kind of was, like, getting up on points, where Cater knew, like, I got to go too, you know? I have to, like, start throwing my combinations now, but he... Like, Cater hits, dude, he hits hard, man. Like, just, and it's, like, all technique, you know? Like he just gets, like, a ton of torque behind his straight punches. But it was a good fight, yeah. Like, I think I like Cater. Like, I think he's good. I think in a five-rounder, he'll be tough to beat simply because he seems to have pretty awesome cardio, you know? But in a three-rounder, I do think, like, he could get off to, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like he could maybe, like, get off to kind of, like, lose the first round like he has before, you know, and just kind of, like, have, like, close split decision. That's the only thing I worry about, having a striking primary skill set, you know?
Yeah, true. It's hard to dominate without grappling time. I had Stevens money line and ends by KO. Like, ends by KO was +170, and I was like, I'm pretty sure Stevens is gonna force a fight here. And I kind of expected it to look like that, where, like, I felt Stevens probably outperformed +220, just because, like, it was always gonna be just the kind of carnage if Stevens did what he was gonna do.
Yeah,
and ends by, I think if it was remade inside the distance, probably like -150.
Yeah, like, I think it just goes to show how, like Cater has gone against some really good strikers and, like, really high volume strikers like Burgos and even, like, Zabit, and he's, like, always performed well. And I think it just goes to show, like, how good Moicano is, because Moicano destroyed him, and it's hilarious that zombie knocked out Moicano, because I just think Moicano is like very good. If he's not getting knocked out, like, he's going to be a very hard guy to beat over three rounds. But yeah, anyway, yeah. Ngannou Rosenstreich, this was ridiculous.
A technical masterclass. There's just nothing that can be said about the Ngannou. What do you guys say about it? It's like, as I said, this is either going to be like a minute of craziness, or it's going to be 15 minutes of tedium. There was no middle ground.
Dude, he just ran forward and got hit with like three hooks himself, and then just knocked out. It's the stupidest fucking thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, you can't argue with results.
Did you see like the gif of like his hands just completely down? Like, he was like, it was like cowboy level shit. Oh my god.
What are you gonna do? It's just, what are you gonna do? Ngannou just like, Ngannou probably, for what he is, just has a understanding that he can afford to take a bomb and his opponent cannot. So it's just like, he just rolls the dice, he wins on a 4, 5, or 6, and then loses on a 1. He just does it over and over.
Like, yes. Yeah.
It's just like, even like I don't think it's like, there's really no equivalent to combat sports history, because even something like Wilder was actually like not an absolutely terrible boxer, and Wilder had to like land straight rights to get the power across. And the guy who just lands arm punches, it's stupid. It's an out of context problem for the sport.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like, I just feel like for Ngannou fights, I like don't even know how to like bet them. You know,
everyone.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. But it's just like, eventually someone's gonna survive that like first round. I mean, it's happened before, but yeah, like guessing that is not an easy thing to do, though. It just is what it is. I'm just glad I like didn't play the fight. You know,
I had some Moses story, and I added, like, I chucked in a bunch of just, like, Ngannou KO and into round one to the last minute, because I was just like, I'm pretty sure this, if I'm going to lose this bet, it's going to be in the first 20 seconds.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, anyway, Cejudo Cruz, I ended up passing on this fight, and I was kind of thinking Cruz had a really good chance to win, but, like, I want to give credit to Cejudo. Like, he looked good, and he came out with a really smart game plan. I mean, I've never really seen him throw leg kicks, and he did it out of the gate.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, as I said, just consistent leg kicking would always kind of fail Dominic Cruz's style, but Cejudo hasn't really been leg kickers, so it's a question of whether he would use them or not. I did actually kind of like what Cruz was doing in the second round. Like, he seemed to understand that, like, it's hard for Cruz to do this, but he kind of seemed to figure out he had to kind of start swinging in and trying to throw bombs. Like, yeah, I was being Dominic Cruz, it's hard to throw bombs, but, like, at least he was trying. The knockout...
more to get rid of the kicks, you know?
And even the knockout, like, I'm pretty sure that Cejudo throws a body kick and just kind of catches him, just because Cruz kind of wobbles into it. But, yeah, I can't say whether that was an intentional drop or that was an intentional strike or not, but how well it worked.
Yeah, I would have liked to see that fight play out more, because I do like, I just, even though Cejudo, I mean, if I could have never known Cejudo was going to go to the legs, you know, because that's not what he does, and he usually headhunts, so, but I feel like he's always going to have trouble like landing punches to the head, you know, on Cruz. But you know, of course, he has his success with leg kicks and, like, a knee to the head. So, I mean, but I would have liked to see it play out more. But Cejudo still looked really good. Like, I've been a critic of him, you know? But this was a legit performance, I thought.
I can agree with that. Actually, I was talking with some people about, say, Cejudo Mighty Mouse. That decision probably had a massive ripple effects on the UFC, more than, like, any other recent split decision.
Oh, but, yeah.
Like, it's Askren to the UFC. Yeah, Askren Mighty Mouse probably doesn't happen. Flyweight's probably still doesn't get like fired. Dillashaw probably doesn't go down. It's like there's a huge chain of events coming off of that. Like, even Masvidal's probably not anywhere near as big a celebrity.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't have got Masvidal, Askren, and then like Cejudo, like, is now kind of, you know, holding up two divisions and kind of making those interesting. Yeah, it's been kind of nuts, actually, the more you say that, yeah.
And, like, yeah, it was just legitimately, like, it wasn't, like, even a moment one. It was just a tight split decision. Because, I think, yeah, there's not many others in the UFC history which make that big a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. On to Gaethje versus Ferguson.
Yeah, this is one, like, yeah, like, it just didn't go as I expected. Like, I thought Ferguson would just kind of maul him after two rounds. And honestly, the first two rounds pretty much went how I expected. And then after that, it just went the total opposite. You know, I thought the first two rounds would be pretty competitive. Where, like, I thought both rounds were, like, pretty close. I think probably I gave Gaethje round one. I think Gaethje was winning a bit of round two, but Ferguson may have taken it with that last exchange. And I thought Ferguson was kind of starting to, like, land more as round two went. And then I thought he would just continue to do that. And then Gaethje just kind of stayed patient for, like, the entire fight, didn't gas, and just kind of beat the fuck out of Ferguson. I did not expect this at all.
I was making Ferguson take over. Yeah. Also, like, in my early rounds, Ferguson was moving with the punches okay for the first two. Like, if I saw if we watched it today, and I was thinking, you know, Ferguson's taking a lot of the sting off the punches in the first two rounds, and then just in, say, about for a third round, he just slows down that extra bit and just starts getting teed off on. Even then, he doubled Gaethje's output in both round three and round four, just pure, like, strikes attempted.
Yeah. It was kind of, like, a thing is that I was really, really shocked at. The main reason I, like, really wanted to bet Ferguson here is Gaethje got outlanded to the head. And I mean, I know he, like, changed his style a little bit, but, like, I think to get this drastic results over five rounds is still kind of nuts, but I mean, it happened, right? But against Eddie Alvarez, he got outlanded to the head 113-69. And then against Poirier, he got outlanded to the head. What was it? 142-56. And then, like, so, like, you look at that, like, it looks like he's not good, you know, with, like, head strike ratios in general. And Ferguson's, like, a head strike ratio god, you know? And then I thought that would be the reason why Ferguson just kind of, like, mauled him and he would kind of take over. But then Gaethje outlanded Ferguson to the head 100-64 in this fight, which is nuts. Like, I mean, that's such a drastic kind of, like, change from what you would kind of project based on their past results. But, I mean, Gaethje just looked really good. He looked improved.
Yeah. Also, I was kind of surprised Ferguson didn't use the push kicks consistently, because I felt like Gaethje's still got a massive body defense vulnerability. Also, like, even the clinch work and sort of wrestling and all that, like, Ferguson didn't necessarily have to get him down, but just forcing Gaethje to wrestle would have been given more ability to, like, use his cardio, I guess.
Yeah, I was just shocked Gaethje just stayed evasive and patient too. You know, like, I thought, like, maybe he would start brawling at some point, and he just kind of didn't. But it wasn't even a low pace either, and Gaethje just still stayed fine. You know.
Yeah, like, you know, he's 9 years in and he's kind of redesigned his style, which is always impressive to say, but it's just hard to really reliably expect.
Yep. Like, yeah, but, I didn't expect it at all, and it just kind of is what it is. Like, he kind of just fucked him up, you know?
Pretty much.
But,
also it's kind of amazing when you win the attritional battle with head strikes against body strikes. Like, kind of reminded me of Zhang versus Joanna in that respect.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, Tim Ferguson doubled him up on body strikes and that sort of stuff, but, like, just the sheer damage of the head strikes added up.
Yeah, for sure.
It was
a good fight, though, but it was one of those fights where, like you know, fights you kind of get wrong, but you're like, oh, someone just hit their win condition. I don't know, like, I thought Verdum was going to dominate Olenek, but it was just kind of like Verdum did dumb shit and kind of just showed up old because it's been 2 years. It's like, okay, like, I get it, you know? And like, Olenek just kind of winged hooks. I'm like, okay, I could see that happening. Where, like, I never even thought this was a possibility of, like, you know, like, I thought Gaethje could always knock him out early. And I thought he could, you know, keep the early rounds competitive, but I did not expect him to just kind of fuck him up in the last few rounds, you know? It was like not even something I really considered, but, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes that's why the sport's kind of nuts, you know?
The cardio dynamic was pretty well established across both their careers. Like, Ferguson's pace is historically sort of legendary, and Gagey's kind of still broad. Like, yeah, Gagey was visibly tired, and every other time he's gone deep.
Yeah.
But, yeah, happens sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. First fight, let's go to the Wednesday card, which is in 2 days, which is kind of nuts. But Villanueva and Sherman, I have not taped this yet, but this seems like right up your alley. What do you think?
I got on Sherman like minus 110-ish before like he started getting pushed down. Villanueva, I've watched 5 fights of his. I'm not sure what he's good at. He just kind of has slow-paced kickbox matches and knocks his 4-8 opponents out eventually. But like, he doesn't really have visible explosive power or anything. He's fought at middleweight originally. He's kind of soft at middleweight. Fought at light heavyweight. Was very soft at light heavyweight. I think Sherman's going to be a lot bigger in the cage. Like, Sherman could have 30, 40 pounds of leg muscle on him. Yeah, it's like Sherman has great output for heavyweight. Is classically tough. I don't think Villanueva can check leg kicks. And yeah, Villanueva's kind of KO or bust, and nothing I saw in Villanueva's pointed him out to me as like having a massive KO ability. He's been getting knockouts lately, but a lot of that's just kind of fighting absolute trash.
Yeah, I'll have to tape. I really don't have anything to add on it now. But so you're kind of saying just like Sherman probably decide KO or bust for the other guy?
Pretty much. Like, Sherman puts out 150-odd strikes a fight when over 15 minutes for heavyweight, which is...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 150 strikes heavyweight is like 10,000 at flyweight.
Yeah.
I felt Sherman, even like, he didn't have the best original UFC run, but he was in close fights as a big underdog for the most part.
Yeah.
Like, him against Willis, he was reasonably competitive. Him against... him against Walter Harris, he generally hung into the close fights, and I just can't see Villanueva building out the tempo. If leg kicks are pretty strong, and I'm just not sure what Villanueva is supposed to be good at.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, to a fight that I kind of know about, Azar and Kelleher. I think Azar should have won personally, but I'm not like minus 175 is just like probably a little too steep, you know? Like, I would be interested in betting Azar if the line closed, but I think, like, right now it's kind of just a pass. But I think Azar is actually pretty good. And I just think Kelleher is super hittable. And, like, Kelleher, I don't know, he's like enthusiastic and whatnot, but I don't think he's going to, I mean, I don't think he can consistently wrestle Azar, and I don't think he can win the striking on the feet, but Azar does have a dumb tendency to kind of get like pummeled up against the cage and just like sits there and cage pushed. And I could see Kelleher having success with that, but like, I think Azar is just way harder to hit on the feet than Kelleher, you know? That's kind of like the main thing I was seeing. And Kelleher has only outlanded someone at distance one time in his career, and that was Damian Stasiak, who's never outdistanced anyone in his career. And even like Kelleher was getting outdistanced by Barao until Barao gassed, like he always does, you know? And Barao actually was still up in the totals. But yeah, like, I don't know. What do you think?
I like to go distance. I got minus
one. Yeah, agreed. Yeah,
I got minus 160, which I like. Kelleher's classically tough. Azul is good enough grappler not to get like memes up, I'd imagine. You know, he's good enough wrestler to stay up.
I think they're both pretty competent on the mat to where it will probably just be a wash, you know. And I don't think like either of them are particularly chinny. Azur seems durable too, you know.
Yeah, like I feel Kelleher's a bit more proven just because he's had the crap kicked out of him a few more times. But yeah, like Azur doesn't seem chinny. Kelleher's put submission for position, which also gives Azar probably an extra string to his bow in grappling exchanges that Kelleher will just randomly give up top position.
Yeah.
Like, I played Kelleher over Ode Osborne, and even then I was kind of pissed that he immediately jumped that Gul'dan.
Yeah.
Like, it worked, but you got a takedown, you essentially move them out, and you just jump a Gul'dan, and it's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, the thing with Azur, it's kind of strange because he's only had like two fights that I think are even relevant to tape, you know, because like everything else is kind of like, he's raw too. I do think like if someone improves in this matchup, I think Kelleher kind of is a finished product where I'm not going to like rely, like I'm not playing Azur, but like if his line got to like -130, I would maybe think about it, you know, but if it was there, at least you kind of have that feather in your cap to where I feel like Azur has just kind of like improved fight to fight, you know, where, and he's still young and raw and athletic, so he can maybe get better, you know. And where Kelleher probably doesn't have that. But the thing about Azur in his last two fights, a contender series and against Katona, he fought both of those fights very differently, you know, like he threw like 20 something damaging leg kicks against that Okan guy, and he attempted 11 takedowns and got 4, where against Katona he didn't really attempt any takedowns, and even though he landed some leg kicks, he didn't like throw as many, you know. So it was kind of like, I don't know, like a takedown heavy attack, I would feel like, and leg kicks in the first fight. Then the second fight he was throwing like more like hands, you know, so it was kind of like a different performance, which is always kind of strange, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that. Kelleher's just generally usually a tough out for people. Like, again, he doesn't go away. Like, he just comes at you, which is, you know, it pays dividends in the over your career. If Azur just kind of gassed or just kind of got drawn into a stupid split decision, wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why, like, I don't like Azur at -175. You know, like, I think he's going to win, but, that's still winning, you know, like 63% of the time or something, implied probability, which is still pretty heavy, you know?
Yeah. Technically, when you've got to see it as like a 70% or whatever to play it, kind of. So, yeah, it makes him more.
Yeah, exactly. And like Kelleher at least is going to do shit. You know, like Kelleher's not just going to like stand there and do nothing. Like, he's going to come forward and try to land offense. So, no, I hear you. Moving on to a fight that I know you're tweeting about and going nuts about, and I need to research a little more, but I'm agreeing with you based on just like before research, Morales and Benitez. It's hard because like, I'll let you take the lead. Go ahead, because I know you like.
It's possible Morales has more than he's shown on tape. So he's only really, you know, I've only really got 3-4 fights of real tape. One of them is in 2012, and it's just like him around the guillotining some dude in Latin American regionals.
Yeah.
But like against Ma, he was really low volume. Against Park, he was both low volume and kind of low urgency. Like Park was just walking at him, absorbing head leg kicks, and still cage pushed him.
Yeah.
And Ma, you know, Dong Hyun Ma was essentially a corpse at that point in his career. It still is. And, you know, he didn't really show much urgency against Ma, and even, you know, in striking, he kind of had a fairly competitive striking match with Ma for what it was, and then spent sort of like, he got the takedown around one off the off a court kick and just hung out on top of Ma for 2 minutes. And then got knocked down, hung out on top of Ma again for 2 minutes. It wasn't like he was showing any elite grappling. Like, he's capable of half guard if you suck.
He only outdistanced Ma 20-15, like, you know, which isn't, and Ma's like very, very bad. Like, there's a reason why I threw Holtzman in like 40 parlays against Ma.
Ma was good when he had a chin, but now he doesn't. He no longer has the chin. Like, yeah, it's just Ma is not in the. I don't rate either of Morales' wins so far until the real fight. Even his Bellator one was kind of just a gear strike match. He landed the head kicking.
Like, I don't think Ma's UFC level for lightweight at all.
Yeah, like, it's possible he is. Like, he's training out of Hard Knocks and all that. Like, I'm not saying he's 100% not, because, again, we haven't seen enough to really say.
I'm talking about Ma.
Oh, yeah. Ma. Yeah, Ma's fucked.
Yeah.
He's not an action fighter.
And, like, I got to see more. Like, he's, like, fun, but he's not UFC level, you know? Like, Morales, it's kind of just, he's a little unproven. Like, we really don't know, you know?
Yeah, but, like, what I've seen, I haven't really been that encouraged by. Benitez, on the other hand, I feel like he's kind of fringe top 20 flyweight in my eyes. I felt he probably wins that Yusuf matchup more often than he loses it, just on the balance. He's quite high volume. His class clearly issues with wrestling, but nothing in Morales really indicates to me that he'll take advantage of wrestling. It's just he's a kickboxer by trade. He's never gone for an offensive takedown apart from the kick catch. And Park literally just pushed him up against the fence. Purely on enthusiasm. Park at certain points that fight was walking at him. We're not even talking fight walk. We're talking walking, strolling down the street, walking at him.
What I have to look at here is how often does Morales grapple, and is Benitez susceptible to grappling? Because I have to look. I remember the Ursula fight. I just haven't. I've dived deep into eight of these fights, and this is one of the three I still have to get into, along with that heavyweight fight. But it's Benitez on the feet is pretty awesome. He has 71% striking defense, which is elite. There's only a couple fighters who are even there, you know? And I know you have to adjust for quality of competition, but he's fought some pretty good fighters, better than Morales for sure. And he also lands at his striking ratio is good too. He lands 4.32 significant strikes per minute and absorbs 2.93. So it's if Morales gets forced just into a kickboxing fight, it's going to be tough to just being minus 180 against anyone being minus 180 against Benitez, if it's going to be a kickboxing fight, is kind of tough to be, you know?
Yeah. And I'm not going to say unequivocally that Morales can't grapple, but we literally haven't. I have no type of him doing offensive takedowns. As far as I can tell, there is no type of it. So it's just and I'm guessing based on his background being kickboxing that he's probably not secretly a D1 wrestler. It is possible, but yeah.
And from South America, so he probably can't wrestle. There's only three people on that continent who can wrestle well. But
Barzola was the only person on the continent. Barzola was the only person below Brazil who can wrestle.
Yeah. Some Brazilians can. They kind of learned it, and then the only other person I know is Barzola. Yep. I'm trying to think. I literally can't think of anyone else who can.
Benitez has struggled with volume wrestling, but it's going from literally never hitting a takedown in your life to being Enrique Barzola is a bit of a stretch. It's possible that Morales is a bit bigger, so maybe he could turn to a pressure wrestling performance, but again, there's no proof. I have no idea. And even in the striking match, Morales seemed pretty hittable and pretty low volume, from what I could say. He beat Park just because Park couldn't check half kicks. Park just did not have that skill set. And I'm pretty sure Benitez can. Oh, Benitez throws his own leg kicks. Even Yusuf. Yusuf stopped calf kicking Morales in the last fight because he was losing the leg kick battle straight up.
Yeah, I just need to research it more. But I remember both guys. I kind of refresh my memory on the Ma fight, because I just kind of remember it just being Ma not doing anything and Morales kind of getting some takedown. He got a takedown at a time, but Ma's not a very good grappler. And then I kind of just remember that Park guy not being very good, you know? And I know Benitez, so I don't know. I just have to tape it a little more. I didn't know Morales is old.
Yeah, he's been around. His first fight was 2010 or something. It was 2000. Let me just check again. I remember I was looking at it. There's an inexplicable 6 year gap in his career where he does nothing.
He's 35 years old.
His first MMA fight was 2011. Which is he's apparently a kickboxer, but all his kickboxing footage seems to be, just based on YouTube upload date, seems to be 2012, before that. So it just seems a 6 year gap in his career where he doesn't seem to be doing much. But, who knows? He's probably got a real job, but as you do. But, again, I feel like people are giving him a lot of credit for the South American nowhere kickboxing credential, which, historically, those have kind of usually meant nothing. because this is in like kickboxing, and this is some weird like karate riot variant. Yeah, again, I'm not saying he could be Lyoto Machida. I'm not saying he's not, but I don't. I think I'm happy to find out. +162
Yeah, especially against like a proven fighter, you know.
Yeah, Benitez kind of probably unlucky, but everybody's lost to it. Featherweight's been the same. You know, it's sort of ranked level featherweights, and he's had close fights with a few of them. Like, you know, it's all legit losses.
And he's absolutely like fucked up everyone else, you know. I'm excited to look into this fight a little more, definitely. Eubanks should dominate. Morass will kind of just have to get takedowns and hope Eubanks tires out, you know? That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I don't mind Eubanks' submission for a small stab. Like, again, she's got this supposed insane grappling. Yeah, she's had success. Morass is easy to take down. I'll take a roll of the dice at +620 But yeah, otherwise, that's the price is about right. Like, yeah, Eubanks dominated Roxanne grappling wise, and Morass is no Roxanne.
Yeah, Morass, it's weird. Like, Morass, like, if you kind of like dive deeper into her fights, she kind of just goes for takedowns. And like, even though she doesn't have a lot of takedowns, if you include her Ultimate Fighter fights, that's kind of what she likes to do. But she's never outdistanced, I think, anyone in her career. Like, yeah, if this stays on the feet, this is a mismatch. And then Eubanks will probably be, you know, pretty dominant if she gets top position too.
Yeah, like, I just can't seem like maybe Morass somehow pulls enough of a Betchka Hayes sort of situation.
I think Eubanks will have to gas and Morass will have to get top position to win. I think that's going to, which is like possible, but probably not going to happen, you know?
And she'd need like two solid rounds of it as well. Like, she's probably not finishing in top position, and like, you know, it's not like she can just instantly sub her or something like that.
I don't think she can sub her. I do think Morass is heavier on top, like a little better on top position than people may give her credit for. But Eubanks is still just like way better everywhere else. And Eubanks still like survived Aspen Ladd, who's heavier on top, you know? And like still reverse position once she got taken down. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm about right. So I don't mind a small stab at sub. Like, you know, it's possible submission looks like a hindsight, like +200 but again, you never know of these sorts of things.
Yeah. And Eubanks also has never been outlanded in her career, even in all her losses, which I know you're not going to like because one of them was against Ladd. But,
that's the draw.
Yeah.
She got knocked down in round one and then she got 10-8 in round two. Like, I'm not saying she won that fight, but I felt it was a fair draw.
I rewatched it and I agreed with the draw for sure.
Like, yeah, round one.
I thought she won a few rounds.
Yeah, round one, she finishes with a knockdown, which classically judges tend to like. Round two, she gets annihilated. So I'm not denying that. Round three, she wins a striking pretty clearly.
Yeah. Moises and Johnson.
This is the line Johnson deserves.
Yeah.
Again, there's a few cards fights in this card. I'm just playing a submission prop, so I'm playing Moises' submission small at +450 Moises can grapple. Like, he got owned by Dariush and by Ismagulov in the grappling, but like, there's no real shame in those two, in my opinion. And
yeah, they're both legit.
Johnson made Darren Elkins look like Demian Maia, and also made Stevie Ray look like Demian Maia.
I played Elkins in that fight as a huge dog. I was just like, he's gonna eventually get a takedown, and he's gonna just finish him.
Yeah, I was pretty big on Johnson. Yeah, that was an interesting fight. I know I got what I deserve for doubting Elkins.
Oh yeah, I mean, the line was obviously everything there, you know. But yeah, it's just like MJ's got real good like first layer takedown defense, but if you get him down, he's in a lot of trouble, you know.
Yeah, it's the way I saw it back in the day. It was just like Elkins is getting hit very, very hard in the face a lot, which he did for the first 5 minutes.
MJ almost hit his win condition. It's just if Elkins is still there, you know, 10 minutes later, like shit's gonna get scary, you know.
Particularly the way it took Elkins like legitimately like 30 seconds to get a tap, and I was just like, yeah, Johnson. Like, Elkins, how long did it take Khabib to tap Johnson?
A while.
Exactly. Yeah. Elkins is a better grappler than Khabib. He just held back by his lack of athleticism.
Yeah, like, I mean, I got Elkins at, like, plus 160, you know, kind of, like, towards later, you know, in the week. Like, it was a while ago. But I originally was just like, I'm going to pass. And then he became such a big dog, and I was like, I'm taking a swing. But, anyway, yeah, this fight, I don't know. Like, it's kind of just, like, whether or not Moises can kind of get takedowns. I mean,
Moises isn't awful on the feet. Like, Johnson should be better, but, like, yeah, I don't think Moises isn't getting totally, like, totally takedown
fast. Agreed. I agree with that. Yeah, for sure.
Like, I like Moises as a prospect. Like, yeah, he's lost to two top 20 lightweights when they got shut out by both of them, but, yeah, Moises is solid. Like, yeah, I take Moises. There's a bunch of guys I take Moises over, and, like, you know, around the sort of around the area of lightweight, just lightweight. Like, you know, he's a solid mid-tier lightweight, and I think he's got strong potential. So, you know, I'm not playing money line at this point because Johnson's kind of such a head case. I'm pretty sure if Moises win this, will be a sub because, like, he'll get some. Johnson will start going backwards and panic and just get really naked choked.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like Moises a lot. Even like Moneyline minus 110 is honestly, it's a little bit tempting. Now I'm thinking about it in a bit more depth.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Like, I mean, I could see, I could really see either guy winning it. Yeah, I don't know. It's tough. Johnson is, like, kind of hard to get down. Once he gets down, he's fucked. But, like, I probably give him an edge on the feet. But, like you said, it's not by a mile. So, you know, I kind of just, like, see arguments for both guys, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I might have to look into it a little more. Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, just the gut feeling. It's like, you know, I'd rate Johnson minus 200 in the boxing match, but it's, like, minus 8,000 Moises in the grappling match.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, yeah, you know, I've heard Johnson's been tapped by some absolute scrubs, like, just in training.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all we need to say, really, about this fight. But, yeah, Johnson's not a very good grappler on the mat. And then...
Tragic heavyweights.
Felipe Lins Arlovsky. I think this is going to be a competitive fight.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a competitive kind of scrappy decision. That's kind of my gut feeling.
Pretty much, like, yep.
Lins doesn't really come forward that much. Arlovsky, again, I'm kind of in the school that Arlovsky's chin's underrated in a lot of ways. Like, he tends to get bombed out. He doesn't tend to go out for jabs. And, like, Lins is kind of picking on some very bad competition. Like, I was talking to somebody who even accused, like, if you watched Lins versus the guy who got that guillotine on Alagalinka.
Yeah.
And, like, apparently they're training buddies, and there's, like, there's a belief that he might have taken the dive. Because it was the first fight of the tournament thing.
PFL, yeah. It looked pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it was two fights in one night. And, like, you know, this guy is pretty confident that Lenkar took a dive, which wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. No, it's just, it's like Arlovsky, it's kind of tough, though, because, like, I mean, Arlovsky should have beat Sakai, and I don't think, I think Sakai's, like, can you really put Lins much higher than Sakai? I don't think so, you know? Like, they're probably in the similar tiers, right?
Yeah, obviously they fight pretty similarly. Like, they're both kind of vaguely karate-based, and I think Sakai's got a bit more upside in terms of durability and athleticism. Like, Lins is probably a bit more polished than Sakai, but also has a bit more, just a bit less athletic.
And Arlovsky also outlanded Walt Harris 40... I forget exactly what it was. I think it was like 45-25, you know? Like, Harris landed a few big shots, but, like, yeah. They're both kind of volume guys, and Andre can definitely out-volume you, you know? Andre's had, like, obviously a few bad performances too, you know? But, like, he's fully capable of winning this fight as well, and we don't know that much about Lins, right? I think it's Arlovsky or pass, personally.
Yeah, that's my perspective. Like, I think go distance allows some solid value at plus 130. I'd cap it as a favorite.
Like, I'd cap it as a favorite too. Yeah.
Yeah, Lins kind of doesn't move forward. So I don't think he hits particularly hard. Like, he's heavyweight. Everybody hits kind of hard, but he doesn't have, like, power.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be a scrappy split decision more than anything else.
Yeah.
Like, I probably rather have GTD at plus 130 than Arlovski at plus 130 at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm
probably passing here, but I don't think Linz is a good play, you know?
Yeah. I also took some Linz by decision at plus 550 from the early line. I was like, yeah, I'll take that. But, I think Arlovski probably wins the decision with a fair clip, but yeah, it's plus 550 for what should be a coin flip decision.
For sure.
And even if Arlovski rocks up like he did against Rothwell, I think he takes this pretty convincingly. Arlovski against Rothwell, Arlovski against Sakai or Rothwell, I think takes this pretty convincingly. He dominated Sakai in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Apart from the scorecards.
No, definitely. I think it's just weird because when you just look at win loss record, it's like, yeah, Arlovski's lost a lot, but if you really look at his last four fights, hold on.
He just got jabbed by Rosenstrike and died, which is, it's a thing. But
whatever, it just is what it is. And that's one of five fights he showed a bad chin in, right? Like, every other fight he's been fine. And then he murdered Rothwell. He should have beat Sakai. And he outlanded Harris in a split decision. It's like he could be 3-1 in his last four fights. And it's like, I know he ends up being 1-3, but it's just, he's probably undervalued here, I guess is what I'm trying to say, just because of what one random judge said in two fights, right?
As somebody who's bet on Arlovski a lot, I'm very aware of this fact. Arlovski's probably value-wise been one of the best bets in the sport in the last 3 years.
I know, but he's paid off wrong. And
he's actually about broken even, honestly. Just because he's been such a big dog. I max bet him against Albany at plus 350.
Yeah, I mean, there's some
Albany is not very good.
People say when do you brag about winners? And it's I did not even bet on Arlovski in any of these fights, but I can tell you that I side with the people who played him, as a big dog in some of these fights over getting lucky and getting the monster favorite in a split decision,
Yeah, pretty much. It's Arlovski's just still fairly competent. He's kind of the ranked heavyweight gatekeeper. Linz, I don't even mind Linz's style. I do think he's fairly technical for heavyweight, but he also lacks that kind of insane heavyweight athleticism.
Yeah,
you need to go somewhere. Linz is the kind of guy who gets knocked out by Derek Lewis after dominating for 10 minutes.
Yeah,
that's just where he is in society. If Linz beats Arlovski, he'll just inherit the Arlovski title.
Yeah, this is a pretty good card for just a Wednesday. Looking at it, there's a few good matchups. And moving on to one, Vittori Robertson. I think Vittori should take this. I think the kickboxing is pretty close, and Vittori definitely is the better grappler. Will he go to that? Your guess is as good as mine, but the fact that he could go to it, it has to be factored in the percentages, and that's why he should be a favorite, in my opinion.
Yeah, pretty much. Striking-wise, I'd lean the Robertson by a small margin on the feet and Vittori by a wide margin on the ground. I think Vittori's submission at plus 600-ish is still value.
Yeah.
Because Robertson's kind of, also part of how Robertson grapples is he seems to be, I'm trying to put this, he believes in his own grappling too much.
Yeah.
He's the sort of guy who'll go for subs and go for sweeps and then opens himself up to get eaten by Glover or equivalents.
Yeah, Vittori should be at an edge on the mat. I don't know if he'll take it there though, but on the feet, see, this is what I was kind of thinking. I think we can both agree it's competitive there. Either guy winning wouldn't be a surprise. But I was sort of favoring Vittori just because he's so active, And Robertson, even though he's not been outstruck at distance on the feet or anything, he's kind of low volume, but he also doesn't get hit at all. So it's kind of one of those things. If Vittori just comes at him with a lot of volume, will Robertson be able to keep up? Maybe, but maybe not type of thing. So I really wasn't sure. I can't fault Robertson too much for only outlanding Marshman and Kapilov by like a small margin because he was like kind of winning. Well, not, I mean, at least against Marshman, against Kapilov, it was actually split going into round three. But it's kind of one of those things where it's like, if someone pushes the pace, can he keep up? I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Was Kapilov or Robinson split going into round three? I remember that being a domination just off the top of my head.
It was split.
It was in Russia, wasn't it?
Yeah, true. It was in Russia. But I looked up, yes, it was split going into round three.
I remember his leg, like, I haven't done typing this recently, but I remember his leg was falling off. And like against Marshall, yeah. the stats got skewed by Robinson spending like 8 minutes on top. Like total strikes was 90 to 30. Even six strikes.
Yeah, no. Robertson won that fight clean for sure. Against Kapilov, he was a little low volume. So essentially, like what was happening, they both were like super hesitant. And then Kapilov was actually doing better to the head for the most part. Like he was landing some good punches and it was like reasonably competitive for two rounds. Robertson started kind of like taking over with a lot of leg kicks. Like he landed like powerful leg kicks too. And then round three was like kind of the same. And then he randomly got a takedown and subbed him. But that's the thing is like Kapilov had success to the head. Like when he was actually throwing, he was landing. But he also kind of got chewed up. They're both southpaws too. And so is Vettori and Robertson. So I do think Robertson's going to go for that leg again. You know, I think I just expect a pretty competitive kickboxing fight if it stays there, you know, because like Vettori competed with Israel on the feet, like even at distance, like, and he even outdistanced Israel in the third round, you know, so it's not like Vittori's in over his head in a kickboxing fight.
Yeah, great. Should be good fun. I think, yeah, Vettori, if he grapples, should dominate. If he doesn't, gets a bit more chaotic, but that will.
Yeah.
Sure. Speaking of chaos, I think Borg versus Simon's going to be interesting. Like, I expect Simon to win, but like I think the striking is going to be some stupid striking exchanges in this fight.
Yeah. I think Simone's going to win, but it's funny, like Borg is so, like, Borg's just incredible at, like, kind of just, as I say that, money just came in on Borg. But Borg's just really good at kind of just like leeching himself onto you, you know? But Simone has incredible takedown defense. Like, it's going to be very, very hard to just kind of like out physical him and kind of just like grind on him. You know what I mean? Like, and the thing is, Simone can land takedowns, I feel like, anytime he really wants here. Cause Borg, even though I like both guys, like I've like bet both guys historically, you know, but, the thing about Borg is like, he gets taken down pretty easily if you can actually do takedowns yourself, you know, and Simone can definitely do that. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see what Simone decides to do, whether or not he just does a sprawl and brawl strategy or like a mix of both or goes to takedowns, you know, because I think he should go for takedowns to kind of get Borg off of him, kind of like he did the Yaya. And I tend to think Simone will win, but like the thing about Simone, Simone's kind of low volume on the feet. Even though he can crack hard, he doesn't like land a ton of strikes. But I mean, Borg doesn't either, right?
Yeah, I think I have this weird feeling it's going to end up looking like Yaya Simon, where it ends up being a silver shit fest on the feet, where they're both kind of like trapping. But the issue with Borg is there's so little time of him on the feet to really get a feel for his kickboxing, I guess.
Yeah,
they're both pretty headable, from what I feel from seeing in the past. But I think there's a good chance it ends up just being sort of sloppy wrestler hooks.
Yeah, I think Simone should just kind of like try to go for volume takedowns, like because he can land takedowns at will, in my opinion, in this matchup, and I think it will just like score, you know, like score. We're like, I don't know, I don't. If he goes for sprawl and brawl, it's just like I don't like really trust either guy's striking, and I probably lean Simone based on like power and athleticism, and just like I've kind of seen him there. I mean, he's still cracked with Font a little bit, you know. But yeah, who knows? Like, it's just Borg's usual win path is probably going to be tough to do, which is why I think he's going to lose. You know what I mean? Just because he's not just going to easily be able to go out grapple Simone.
Like, we could find out with Borg's striking is better than we really think it is, and yeah, you know, you could see that could happen. But again, just based on what we actually know, I'm expecting Simon should have more control over where the fight takes place, and it should give him a bit more of an edge.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm expecting a pretty chaotic sort of rough fight.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, here we go. I feel like this is the people's main event here. Dober Hernandez, take it away.
Alexander Hernandez is not very good at MMA, especially since his balls fell off during the Trinaldo fight. I think Hernandez to win this would have to come out like he did against OAM, where he was rabies frothing in the mouth aggression, and I don't think that guy necessarily exists as much as he used to, just because like he was so hesitant to crunch against Ronaldo.
And
Tobu has this ability to punch him very, very hard in the face, which I don't think Hernandez will enjoy.
I knew this was gonna be fun. I take this really hard, actually, because I was obviously interested in the fight, but if Hernandez goes with the, like, if Hernandez doesn't, it's kind of tough because, like, Hernandez attempted what, like, a high volume of takedowns against OAM, but against Trinaldo, he only went for one, you know? So it's kind of like, what's going to be his strategy? I tend to think he's going to go for takedowns because I think Dober is going to pressure him hard, you know? Because, I mean, when does Dober ever take a back step? But I mean, if Hernandez just strikes with him, I think he's going to get fucked up badly. But if he wrestles with him, that's like what I was focusing on, because I tend to think he's going to try to go for takedowns. And like what I was noticing is like I think Dober has an edge on the feet. And the thing I was noticing with Hernandez is just from the takedown perspectives, he does a lot of like, he gets stuck in over-unders a lot, like if you watch it versus OAM, and Dober is good there, like at actually kind of turning you back against the cage and disengaging. But Hernandez can string together a decent like double leg below the waist here and there. And I tend to think like if Hernandez shoots like 8 or 9 takedowns, like he might get a few, but not like a ton type of thing. And then on the mat, this is where I was really focusing on, like, Hernandez doesn't land any ground and pound, which is, like, kind of, yeah, I don't know, you'd expect just kind of, like, with his, like, high aggression style at times that he would, but he just kind of holds position against OAM, and even on the regionals, he just kind of lays on you, and he doesn't pass either. He only passed 2 times against OAM on 4 different takedowns, and the thing about Dober is, against Camacho and other guys, especially if they are in his guard, and because Hernandez doesn't pass that much, I think Dober does a good job at kind of pushing against the head and immediately springing back up. It's more so when you, like, the times he was, like, held down and kind of dominated was, and not even dominated that much, was against, like, Dariush, and those are, like, guys who actually pass and are dangerous from, as a submission grappler, which I don't think Hernandez is. So I think, like, the fact that if Hernandez is landing takedowns, he may not even be landing any ground and pound, and I don't think he'll be passing guard much. So I think like the offense will be limited on Hernandez. You know what I mean? And then I think Dober will have like an output and just like striking advantage to where he should probably win. Sorry that I went nuts. But yeah.
It's all good. Like the way I see it is just, I think Hernandez has to apply a level of aggression, the clinch and all that to tire Dober out / get those all volume takedowns.
Yeah,
I can't see Hernandez just hitting like flawless doubles or anything from distance. And Dober will punish him coming into, you know, like OAM didn't punish him because OAM doesn't like striking for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, you know, OAM still clipped him hard in that fight. Like, and OAM just doesn't put up volume and tends not to sort of swing to the best of advantages. But I think Dober will put the fear of God into Hernandez. Like, Hernandez can be discouraged. I think Cerrone and Trinaldo both kind of demonstrate that quite hard.
Yeah, the straight punches of Cerrone really fucked Hernandez up too. And like Dober has like a really quick straight punch, you know? Like Dober just lands too. and I feel like he's just really improved too. So I think he should probably win. And I do like that it, like,
I'm still kind of like undecided on the fight, but I'm going to like look into it more. But I do think Dober is going to win though. But another thing is if Dober, I like that even against Dariush, he was working back up and Dariush was like falling off position. Like he lost position because Dober like successfully got up, but he just kind of like got an arm bar. And I don't think Hernandez is capable of, he's a wrestler. I doubt he can do arm bars, you know?
I'm sure he's like capable, but yeah, it's not really a.
It's not like a good, yeah.
Even Dariush kind of had to bat. Yeah, that was kind of the emergency, like, oh fuck, I'm falling off, Amber.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I bet on Dariush against Dober and I was not confident or happy about the result or that bet.
I did too, and I was like, fuck.
Yeah, that sure. Was.
Yeah.
That was almost very, very bad. Like, I had the under too, so I wasn't too mad, but still.
Yeah. I just think Dober's improved, you know, like he's not the same guy he was in like 2015, 2016, you know?
Yeah. Again, I just feel like Hernandez is good. Unless Hernandez can just somehow turn a tight down to an instant tap, which I don't think Hernandez is all grappler who does that. I just think he's going to have to expose himself.
Yeah.
Trying to pressure Dober and he's going to get punished enough that he's either going to stop coming forward or he's just going to fall down unconscious. And yeah. Also Dober can just like, if he shoots low on Dober, his calves will just crush him.
Yeah,
Dover's calves and chin are insane.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure how they have formed into such a perfect form, but yeah, I'm hoping Dover wins the lightweight title as soon as possible.
Yeah, the thing is with like Dober is just like he's never been knocked out, and I don't think Hernandez is really like a submission grappler, so it's like he's kind of got to win a decision here, and. He's going to face a lot of adversity if he needs to win a decision. You know what I mean? Like there's going to be some very sketchy spots for him.
Where, yeah, he's going to get clipped hard at least once. And, you know, judges can be all over the place, but I feel like they've been favoring striking over grappling lately.
Yeah, I do like that Dober just, he fights over-unders well. And Hernandez just, he would sit there versus OAM, and OAM would just kind of be an idiot and hang out like with the over-unders against the cage, and then Hernandez would drop for a double, you know? So it's like, I don't even think Hernandez will get as many of those opportunities because Dober like actually fights those underhooks like well, but is Dober bigger too? Like when I was like taping him, I have no idea if this even matters, but I just feel like Dober's like pretty like physical and huge. Wasn't he like a welterweight at some point?
I don't think he was, but like Camacho's kind of fluctuated between the two, and Dober hung out so size-wise with Camacho. And Hernandez, I don't think he's that big a lightweight. Like, he's athletic, but I think he could probably make featherweight if he really wanted to.
Yeah, like, I have no idea if this... I'm just kind of, like, you know, talking shit right now, but I don't know. Dober looks huge. Like, I just whenever I was taping, I was like, I was surprised.
I think it's mostly his calves and his chin. It's just, he's got some interesting bodily, some interesting proportions, I guess. His calves especially, that's insane. It's like
Benson Henderson. He's fought a couple welterweight fights, it looks like, Dober. But I mean, I no idea if that matters or anything in the fight. But I was just trying to kind of measure the physicality, like, and who would win the position on the over-unders and the clinch. And I just, like, noticed that Dober was a big dude. But, yeah, who knows? But, yeah, I tend to think Dober can win. I don't think, like, I could potentially see Hernandez grinding it out, but... I think it's going to be tough. Like, it's definitely going to be tough. OSP Rothwell, max bet on both sides and take the loss.
Yeah. I mean, you'll pay for the privilege. You'll pay the gambling gods to say to your children that I saw Rothwell versus OSP.
I've had a few people DM me about this fight, and I was just like, fuck, like, I don't know. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen. It's a mess.
Yeah, like, I like playing messes, and I have no opinion. Like, I just, like, I was going to play Vellante pretty big over Rothwell at plus 300. Like, here, I have no opinion.
I mean, this is truly probably the last fight I would ever bet in my entire life. Like, I was just like... imagine like just trying to like convince yourself to play one side, and you're like, well, Rothwell's plus money, but then you're like, well, fuck,
Like, did you see him versus Arlovsky? And it's like, OSP, he's minus 140. Like, does he even do anything? You know, I don't know. Like, this is just, who knows to me? Like, I guess OSP is like more athletic and stuff, but I don't have much to say about this.
Yeah, I agree totally. I just can't. I would usually be right there in this trash, but no. Oh, yeah.
Usually I'm the one kind of like staying away from a fight like this, and you're like, and I mean, you're generally profitable on them, but you're the one trying to like make an argument for the underdog in this case. But I'm glad we're on the same page for once to stay the fuck away from this fight. But
I think Rothwell's looked worse. Like, Rothwell against Orlovsky, Rothwell against Struve looked terrible, but, like, Rothwell against Ivanov looked fine. And OSP's there. Like, OSP's looked absolute dog shit lately.
At least Rothwell will, like, come forward. But, yeah, like, pass. I don't want to talk about this fight anymore. Speaking about another fight, I actually researched this fight and actually had more fun than I thought. But Glover Smith, I have a feeling you're on Glover here as a dog, right?
I'm taking a small world with Dyson Glover on Glover. I'm sub. I could see him just getting right arm triangle consistently, but yeah, the 5 rounds gives Smith enough time to just kind of Smith on him. Like, I like Smith. He's a good dude. That was the mere fight. It's probably the happiest I've ever been during a UFC fight.
Yeah,
like the money wasn't even that big. It was just that call was a great moment. Like my prediction here is like Smith round four. Like Smith will drop 2 rounds for no real reason, and then just randomly kill Glover in round four.
Yeah,
like you'll probably be able to get Smith like plus 150 at some point, I'd guess. Like Smith will do nothing for the first 10 minutes because that's how Smith rolls, and Glover will be like have some urgency and will get takedowns and kind of just like control them for a bit, and then like Smith will just rock up.
Yeah.
And Glover's head will fall off.
Yeah.
That's my prediction here. Like, I wouldn't touch money line. Like, I took a little bit of plus 160 money line on the FX exchange, but
yeah,
even that was more just, I was planning to trade it off more than actually wanting the Holdens to close.
Yeah, I found like a lot of interesting, like, I think the reason why this fight's kind of tough is I feel like it could play out in different areas, you know? And it's kind of like whenever you cap a fight like Khabib, it's pretty much the only, I feel like it's not as hard to cap because you're really just wondering, like, can Khabib consistently out-wrestle him, you know? And can the other guy stop takedowns? And, you know, so you kind of have to, like, look at one scenario. Where with this, it's kind of like I could see it playing out on the feet for a while. I could see, like, Glover getting top position. I could see Smith getting top position. You know what I mean? I could see like, yeah. I could see either guy coming with a different game plan. You know, like I don't really know, but what I notice is on the feet, you know, Glover's done really bad at distance in his last few fights. Like Krylov outlanded him 37-22 at distance. Corey Anderson outlanded him from distance 31-17, and Kudalaba outlanded him 43-16. And even though like Smith doesn't have statistically the best striking ratios, like historically, he outlanded Ozdemir 48-45, and he lost to Gustafsson 70-44, but that was mostly like all in one round, and he still like competed decently, you know, in that fight. And so like, I don't know, like I think I probably give Smith the edge on the feet, but I guess it's not like a blowout because Smith still is flawed, you know, and can kind of like, sometimes he gets like overwhelmed if you come in with pressure and hands and boxing, and that's kind of what Glover does, but I tend to lean Smith there. What do you think about like the striking?
Yeah, it also depends which tempo Smith comes out with.
Yeah.
We've seen Smith do nothing. We've seen Smith, like Smith Shogun, where he just went crazy.
Yeah.
Like, if Smith just shogunned Glover, I wouldn't be shocked. Yeah. But, you know, he just came out like a house on fire, threw 40 strikes in 2 minutes and killed Glover. That wouldn't shock me. But yeah, also, if Smith decided to do nothing for 3 rounds, it would also not shock me.
Like, yeah, that's
just cool. Such a wide range of
yeah,
outcomes here.
And because there's so many wide ranges of outcomes, it's like you have to assign a probability for all those to like then cap the fight. And so like that's why I'm having trouble with it. Because I'm like, I could totally see the argument of Glover being the side as an underdog. But like, if somebody convinced me that Smith should be a favorite, I wouldn't be, you know what I mean? Like, I would be like, yeah. But another thing that I saw, and I'm not betting this fight, but just to at least give some information to like people who are potentially betting Glover, I do think he can land takedowns, you know? But once he's actually there, like something that I found was interesting, and like, I don't know, do with what you want with the information. Smith has allowed 20 takedowns, like in his career, like Strikeforce, UFC, and everything. And he's only allowed 12 passes, which is pretty good, you know? And those were pretty much all against Cesar Ferreira and Roger Gracie, kind of like earlier in his career. And Cesar only passed three times on six takedowns. So like, if you just kind of look, like each time Smith gets taken down, he generally like retains guard, and he's actually done decent in grappling tournaments lately too. So I guess what I'm trying to say is like the win condition of Glover getting takedowns and getting like a finish, like he might, I don't know if he'll easily sub Smith just because he might not totally pass his guard, you know, and kind of just dominate. But one thing Smith does that's really dumb is he turtles up and gives up his back at times. Like, do you remember he did that against Jones, and he did it against Austin too? And so like, even though I think like generally, like as like he, as like a traditional rule, he's done good at kind of like limiting passes. Glover is good at getting those hooks and flattening you out. So I could see like an opportunity for Glover to at least land some ground and pound and kind of like get a dominant position. But one thing, another thing I wanted to point out, and this was like more interesting to me, is even though Smith has only had four takedowns in his career, he actually passes guard. He has a ton of passes. Like, I think he has nine passes, so he passes well. And if you watch him, he generally like does well once he gets on top. And this was the craziest stat that I found. And if you kind of watch his fights, you'll see it. Glover has given up 10 takedowns in his last six fights and has allowed 18 passes. So I'm just saying, like, Glover, if Smith gets on top of him, Glover like is getting his guard pass. Like, Glover's a good grappler, especially from top position, but when he's on the mat, he's not as good, you know? So I just wanted to point that out because I thought it was interesting. I think the like on the mat things could get interesting.
Anthony Smith's submission round four is 126-1.
See, I like,
my body is telling me yes.
The thing is, like, I get
where you're coming from.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying like I think Smith is going to sub Glover, but his submission, like, I just thought it was interesting. His submission line is what
plus 1400,
and Glover's allowed 17 passes and in 10 takedowns and is less. You know what I mean? And this is a 5-round fight where he might gas. So like, he could. Just the fact that he allows that many passes and Smith generally passes well once he, if he ever gets on top, like I could see shit happening, you know? So I just wanted to point that out because it's plus 1500, but I just thought that was interesting. Like in general, whenever I was looking at that, because I kind of noticed like Krylov and other guys just getting some dominant positions on Glover at times. And then once I kind of looked at the stats, I was like, holy shit, like my eyes were telling me the truth, you know?
Yeah, but also, I mean, in context, like, Glover got passed by, what, Davis, Corey Anderson kind of manhandled him once again.
For sure. Agreed. Like, yeah, different type of fighters. I agree.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who else, but yeah, just off the top of my head, those two there. I remember Corey Anderson was kind of just ugly Glover getting kind of just cardioed.
And Corey Anderson's passes are, like, different. They're, like, kind of, like, riding you type of thing. Yeah, like, So, like, you got to contextualize these things, but I think they're at least, like, interesting to have, and I still think it's valuable to have that information. You just have to know what to do with it.
Yeah, like, again, like, I think the finish here will probably be very ugly, sort of Smith just kind of pouring it onto a tight Glover, so like, picking up a sub in that situation would not be outlandish. I'm taking a small stab at sub round three, round four, and round five, to have old time sake.
Yeah.
Just because, like, if I hit it again, I'll just be very happy. So I do love Anthony Smith. He's a good guy.
Yeah, having said all my irrelevant stats that probably won't come into play here, I expect Glover to win a couple rounds and then Smith to knock him out pretty much end of story, right?
Yeah, pretty much. He'll get tired and bang. I like Glover's top game a lot in the frame of May. I've always liked how he's a very sort of clear idea of what he's doing.
Yeah, a lot for of people sure. Don't necessarily, I like Glover.
You know, he just keeps pushing him forward, and he has a good idea of what he's going for, what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah, like I could see either guy winning. I do think five rounds helps Smith because I do think Smith is very tough, you know? So like he'll be hard to put away, so at least he'll have 25 minutes to hurt Glover, you know? So that's like one advantage for Smith that it's a five rounder. But like, I mean, Smith is very flawed too. So like Glover can have success, you know?
Yeah, like this is going to be pretty main, man. Yeah, I think I lean Glover to win the early rounds because I feel like Glover has a better idea of what he's doing. And like I have a better idea of what Glover will try and do, or Smith can do anything.
Yeah.
Like if Smith decided he just isn't throwing strikes this fight for three rounds and then just killed Glover in 30 seconds, I would not be shocked.
Yeah.
If Smith just bum rushed him, I would not be shocked. If Smith like typically had like a fairly disciplined striking form, like I think it's Gus most of that, I would not be shocked. He just Smith does whatever it feels like on the night.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's hard to cap this. Like, yeah, I Glover may be value. I'm just playing submission and submission round one just because I feel like A, submissions are classically pretty front loaded anyway. But also, I feel like just the way Glover fights is that if we'll know within a round whether he'll get the sub or not. Just
yeah.
Because like Glover's just going to go for the, you know, he's going to take him down, he's going to pass, he's going to go for the arm triangle. If he hasn't done it in one round, he's probably not going to do it.
One hilarious thing about Smith too, and it's just like, he's just a meme in general, and this makes him even more meme, is like, Ozdemir was landing like a takedown on him, and Smith's takedown defense on it looked so atrocious. But then like, against John Jones, he like actually defended a few takedowns pretty well. And I'm just like, okay, like, can you do this or not? Like, why are you making this more difficult for me to figure out?
As Smith just randomly switches on and off areas of his game.
No, it's like, yeah.
There's footage of Smith looking terrible at everything. There's footage of Smith looking great at everything.
Smith is pretty much, like, I think I tweeted this out. Smith is pretty much Anthony Pettis. His, like, stats are pretty bad. But he's also very tough and has finishing ability, you know, like on the mat and on the feet. So, like, he gets targeted by like people who pay attention to stats, and he sometimes fucks them because he's like high variance because he has finishing ability and he's durable, you know?
Yeah, but yeah, Smith is a, I do like Smith, but he defies explanation. Like, yeah. Most fighters have consistent trends where they show what they're good at and what they're bad at. Smith does not do that.
Yeah.
But, you know, and, you know, I wish Smith all the best. And, you know, Smith wins this, good on him. But, like, yeah, it's hard to say much with any coherency or confidence.
Yeah, his process is lacking.
Yeah.
Which makes it harder.
Some fights he has process, though. Other kind fights of. He does not. It's weird.
Yeah.
Like, sure. again, we've seen him apply four different processes. We've seen him just scream at people, like, just run out screaming. We saw his middleweight, I'll do nothing till round three, and fuck you strategy. And, yeah. Like, yeah, against Gus, he actually looked like he had process, didn't he? The Gus wasn't doing much, but Smith seems to be actually working working okay.
Yeah, like, the funny thing about that fight is, like, Gustafsson, like, going into that fight, like, every stat told you like Gustafsson would dominate him, and Gustafsson outlanded him like 72-49 on significant strikes. But it's funny because if you look at like round by round, Smith like outlanded him in a couple rounds. You know, it was really like round three where Gustafsson really fucked him up, you know? And then of course Smith comes out round four and subs him. Like after his one round where he doesn't do well, like the first two rounds are pretty competitive. Then he kind of gets fucked up, and then Smith decides to come out and sub Gustafsson. it's just shit show anytime Smith is out there.
Yeah, like, I do enjoy watching Smith as a fighter, but it's very hard to bet on him because I think he's a favorite because he will just do so much random shit.
Yeah, he's a good guy to bet on as a dog, but not as a favorite, you know, I feel.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, yeah, because as a dog, there's a chance to randomly surprise you and... Like, it's just, yeah, he just has a huge variance. He just is variance. Like, he's durable, too. He's durable and he has good cardio, which also helps.
Yeah,
it's kind of like he's kind of like Marlon Vera in certain ways.
Yeah, yeah, it's Vera and Pettis, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It works. I mean, yeah, like I hope he keeps going on doing what he's doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, it's almost 4 a.m. over here, so thank God, probably be for dead. It's all good. Cool. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, buddy. Bye.
All good.